right next to the Wareham.
Welcome back to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN on this Monday morning in the Little Apple. Here with Dr. Timothy Schaefer, the Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at KSU and the Assistant Director of the K-State Institute for Civil Discourse and Democracy, talking about all sorts of different issues, mainly a conversation on the conversation we're having nationally. And we did that, get some great phone calls in earlier. Those phone lines are still open, 785-537-1350. And before we went to the break, I teased with a little bit of a theory that I have.
You did. I'm curious about
on
this.
On critical thinking and maybe why we don't. And we have an abundance of news right now, and abundance of, and I'll air quote news, abundance of sources on that. 50 years ago, you had the main newspapers, like Washington Post, New York Times. You still have those, and they're still doing a lot of investigative work, probably in ways they haven't in years today. But you had those big papers and news sources. You had your network news, like around 6 o'clock. You had your local news around 5, 6 o'clock. And you had your local radio stations and your local newspaper. And that was really kind of about it. Yeah, it was kind of a limited. Now you have everything, and it's for everybody. There's a viewpoint for everybody on news, whether it's news or not. And, you know, I come from the approach, and my predecessor, Kathy Dawes, was the same way, an objective approach, that this isn't about trying to make Republicans happy. This isn't trying to make Democrats happy. It's just trying to report what we know, the facts we know. I have Republican conservative friends and listeners that are on that far end of the spectrum who I'm sure think I'm too rough on the GOP and champion, you know, the quote unquote the left's cause. But here's the thing. I have Democrat and liberal friends and listeners I run into, and they think that I'm not being hard enough on the other side, or that I'm not challenging. So, which to me, that's good. I like hearing that. Yeah. I like hearing if both extreme ends of the spectrum are upset with me in any way. That means I'm kind of in the middle. I like that. But would you agree that it's just so much different now, because there's something anybody could post or link that could in some way back up their view?
Yeah, no, it's I'm looking over you. I feel like you want to chime in here. Yeah,
no, we're more interested in hearing what you have to say, and then I might throw in a couple of things.
Okay, no, this is good. So the first thing is, I feel like you've been sneaking in on the class that I teach in the afternoons on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
It's caught me.
It's
I haven't, but
I know. It's a pretty small class.
Yeah. Wait till you get that tuition bill.
Exactly. Yeah, just wait.
Yeah, they're going to track you down.
There's a bit of a discount if you start now.
Okay.
I'm teaching this class right now called Communication and Democracy, and actually last week we were just talking about this very issue about the immensity of opportunities to find information that will reinforce, sympathize with your views, right? And the phrase, this is going to sound a little academic-y, but I think it's helpful. We're, you know, the issue of communicative plenty, right?
So one more time.
Of course, you're going to make me do this twice. the environment that we're in, this kind of in the situation of communicative plenty. So the idea is that we have so many ways to communicate, to speak, but mostly to consume, right? And so the fact that there are increasingly endless sources that can reinforce. And so there are some really significant efforts. Some colleagues at UT Austin who are working on this, their Engage News project, to help people kind of wade through the fact that there's just so much stuff, right? And we're increasingly, the percentages, we keep seeing them going up, people who consume news through social media, and the biases that are inherently built into those systems, to those algorithms, as we've talked about before, right? What are the implications to some of that? To your point, the fact that we no longer live in the world where people sat down at a certain time to watch or listen to the news, right? Or that you picked up the paper on the front porch. All those things still exist, but that is just in the midst of lots of other stuff, right? So how do we kind of work through it? And this is one of the big challenges, is the fact that in those conversations that we were talking about before, right, how, convening people together, what does it mean when anybody walks in with their kind of backing information? It's the same stack of it's a stack of stuff, whether it's from the investigative reporter from, you know, say the New York Times, or from, you know, choose your long form magazine, or if it's from, you know, Joe Blow, who decided to open up a blog spot, right, and now kind of writes his stuff, right? Those kinds of things. That's part of the climate that we're in right now. So how do you work through making sense of what do we believe, what do we not, what has a degree of veracity, or maybe what has some kind of nugget kernel of truth and then gets spun in a certain way? And that's across the board. This is one of the biggest challenges that we confront right now, is that we're literally wading in just information, a sea of information. I always use this example. Like, we've got these little supercomputers in our pockets that are like, you can find stuff real fast. It's not always the best stuff, right? Just because Google search says this is at the top of the list doesn't make it what you should go with.
And I think anybody that's ever been through any statistics class, just any statistics class, you learn pretty quick that one piece of information doesn't tell the whole story. Sometimes you need more information with that piece of information to give you the proper context.
In higher education, we use this phrase called triangulation. Right.
Yes.
So
and metadata. That's
yeah. Well, that's a, yeah. yeah. That's another one of these things. But like, how do you find some proof behind the thing that you're saying, right? And that's not to discount the lived experience of anybody. I think there are ways that we can do that, especially in the social sciences and the humanities. But like, that's something that's important. So it's not just, you know, you making comments kind of grounded and kind of unhinged in the way is that there's no kind of claim to kind of truth. That's one of the things that at our institute here at K-State, we have some ground rules for conversation. And we added one about a year ago that basically says you have to kind of back up your claims, whether it's factual or whether it's lived experience. So it's if we're talking about something locally, you, Dave, whoever else can say, you know, you may not be walking with a report about whatever the thing is, but you can say, I live here, I've seen this, I've experienced this, and taking that in a way that values those statements, that's important too. But this is where we have to find those lines of not having claims not be grounded in something. And so that's all part of this kind of larger environment where we're just in a situation where we've got so much information. How do we now make sense of what we should?
I think one of the things that concerns me the most out of this, and we get a lot of information, we're not so sure necessarily, like you say, about the accuracy, but we're just, I mean, it's just everywhere around us. It's accessible to all of us. But what bothers me the most is, you know, going off the phrase that you have, communicative plenty.
Yeah.
Let's go with communicative volatility.
Yeah.
Because, and you use the word voracious in there, because it is just ugly how things can be. And it separates families. It separates friendships. Because everybody has maybe a stronger opinion than another, mm-hmm. and they have different belief systems. But there seems to be little interest in respecting people's differences. Whereas, you know, if you are a conservative and you have a particular mindset on one particular opinion, does that make you an evil person because of how you've come to that opinion? Because right. You may have grown up in a totally different environment in a rural area mm-hmm. than someone did in an urban environment.
Exactly.
And it just gets so ugly. It's just like, you know, you just got to withdraw. And I've done that myself where it's just like, you know, I feel like that there's a lot that I could say. And there's, you know, you talk about the situation with the shooting. It's not just one problem. It's a multifaceted issue.
Right.
And, you know, Brady and I talked about this the other day when we first heard about a resource officer not going in. How does that change the narrative mm-hmm. when you find out that three more police sheriff's officers
right, exactly.
were on the grounds? How does that change the narrative and possibly the outcome?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And I've alluded to this, but maybe it's helpful just to say some of these things explicitly, is that there are some really wonderful efforts that are happening of how do you bring people across these differences. So one that's catching a lot of traction is called Better Angels. It's basically bringing people from different kind of political stripes into a conversation to see and hear, interact with one another in conversation. And then the other one is that I'm associated with is the Revive Civility campaign of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, which is doing these things like how do we actually talk with one another? And there's some really great resources. So if you go to revivecivility.org, you'll find some of those things.
We do have another caller. We'll take this phone call, then we'll go to a break. But caller, you're on there now.
Yeah, I have three little things. one thing. We're not all alike. You can't change people. It will never happen. We're in a melting pot. It'll always be a melting pot. And the reason they make chocolate and vanilla is because we all have different choices. So I can't see all this debate about trying to get together. We need to get together. Yeah, we need to be one party. We need to work together. I just heard this little girl from Florida talking on the phone. She says, we all need to get along. Well, we need to get along. Doesn't matter if you're at the University, Fort Riley, City of Manhattan, Riley County, Work, State of Kansas. Everybody starts getting along. Doesn't matter if we have Democrats or Republicans. Let's be Americans. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess my reaction to that, I would say, yeah, I think the part of this, and this is where it gets a little kind of nuanced, is that, you know, so a lot of this work is not necessarily about consensus of, like, you know, how do we find the common ground on certain issues, right? So right now the national conversation is around assault rifles, right? And these firearms. That is a particular topic or a theme that's embedded in larger issues. We may find some space to say, yeah, we should maybe raise the age from 18 to 21, those kinds of things, those aspects. But the idea of everybody just being, you know, kind of the kumbaya, and this is, the caller didn't say this, so I'm not putting these words into his mouth, but that's part of the critique, is this, like, that's such an artificial kind of goal. It's aspirational, maybe, but frankly, what I'm more interested in and what I think is more realistic is that we're going to retain our differences. There's nothing wrong with that. And so how do we find the places where we can retain our identities, kind of the things that we care about, that we're concerned about, and then make kind of headway on the aspects that appropriately need to be addressed? And so the idea that, like, not everybody's going to fundamentally change their worldview, but, you know, as this example of someone who is, you know, maybe really familiar with guns, that has, you know, kind of that is part of their identity and their background, contrasting them with someone who's very, you know, uncomfortable, not around any of these types of things. How do you find the space to discuss to the degree that's important the discrete aspects of the issue that they're trying to deal with? That's something different than saying, let's get rid of all guns, or let's leave things kind of as they are. The goal for me is, how do we create these spaces where we can recognize kind of the diversity of perspectives, and not attempt to kind of lose that authenticity of who people are, what they believe. But at the same time, we do have to, what is it that holds us together? And as the caller said, right, you know, we're all American. I mean, this has been that tension that we've always wrestled with. We're a nation that is deeply individual, but also connected with this deep sense of community. And we're always, you know, oscillating between these things, figuring out how much do we emphasize this in contrast to this other side. And then that's a tension that we've been wrestling with since literally we said we're going to band together as a nation, as a country, right? That we continue to confront.
Everybody agrees we should have safe schools and a safe society. It's just keeping your eyes on that
on the prize.
Prize, that's right. We'll wrap up after the break. More In Focus coming up on News Radio KMAN.
When catastrophe hits and your home or office is damaged, get 24/7.